Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Roger Morris, who served in the United States Foreign Service and on the senior staff of the National Security Council under both Presidents Johnson and Richard Nixon until resigning over the invasion of Cambodia. His new book, Between the Graves, is about the history of U.S.-Afghan relations and American policy in South Asia based on thousands of previously secret documents. He's also at work on a comparative history of the inner politics of the United States and Soviet Russia. Welcome to Background Briefing, Roger Morris.
Thank you, Ian.
And we were discussing the Colin Powell's famous presentation to the United Nations, where clearly, very cynically, Dick Cheney, President Dick Cheney, thought he was the best guy to make their case, which he was. He made a very good case. The only problem was it was based on lies, and how the shadow of George W. Bush and Dick Cheney are hanging over this Syrian intervention. Is there any way for Obama to make a case and break through that?
I think it's very hard. I think that kind of atrocity politically in the foreign policy of a nation is hard to overcome. I must say the Democrats, especially the liberals, the Obama supporters, strike me as a parallel to the famous generals who are always fighting the last war. I think they are in the grip of irrelevant experience. That was an atrocity, but this is not Iraq. It certainly is not Libya. What these two instances, Syria and Iraq, do have in common, of course, and what the Obama administration has in common with the George W. Bush administration, is that no one at the higher levels of American foreign policy knows much of anything about the country in question. We didn't know Iraq when we invaded and committed the depredation that we did. We don't know Syria now. And of course, that's doubly true for the Congress of the United States and for the media who are beating the drums here, both for and against. So you've got a kind of common denominator of ignorance. I think a lack of principle on the part of the liberals, who otherwise would be espousing the principle of intervention for humanitarian, for human rights purposes, the object lesson of punishing this kind of violation of international law, but who are suffering, as you quite rightly point out, this hangover from, which I think is irrelevant, Ian, this hangover from the Bush years. It's one more toll of that era.
Well, Roger Morris, the liberals and progressives in this country used to be the heroes during going back in our foreign policy of being opposed to dictatorships, even when the U.S. was cozying up to the Somozas and the Shah and Marcos in the Philippines. And now they seem to be finding every excuse in the world to suggest somehow the rebels are behind this chemical attacks. I don't understand how liberals and progressives lost their moral compass.
Well, I'm not sure it was ever quite as pure as you're depicting it. We know that much of that was honored in the breach. We know that there was less courage in the inner councils of government than there seemed to be outside. Certainly, I was there during the Vietnam War when Bill Fulbright and a few brave voices on the Hill, George McGovern and others, Mark Hatfield, the liberal Republican, led the fight for so long. John Sherman Cooper, the great Republican senator from Kentucky. Those are all ghosts of the past who have no parallel at all with this dysfunctional and degraded system that we find ourselves with now. But I think it's worse than simple hypocrisy. I think we've lost very much any perception of the geopolitics at hand here. This is a policy, and I think that was lost years ago, not necessarily in Syria or the Middle East, although I think we did prevaricate there far too long, but certainly in Moscow. It's a reflection of the complete failure of the Obama administration's Russia policy, that we cannot even talk to the Russians. We do have common interests. We ought to have a more cooperative and collaborative view of policies like this. This is their last client left in the Middle East, and it is, of course, important for the stability of the region, especially in terms of what's happening now in Egypt and elsewhere. So I think that's a failure that Democrats simply don't come to grips with because they don't really understand the larger perspective here, and nor do they understand the reality inside Syria. As I said earlier, I know your earlier guest talked about the futility of some kind of partition that did not give the Alawis access to the sea, and I think that's certainly true. But there are ways, obviously, that diplomacy might at least respond to this crisis. We've seen none of that, none of the kind of serious discussion of partition or resolution that ought to have come out of this.
Again, I'm speaking with Roger Morris, who served on the senior staff of the National Security Council's under President Lyndon Johnson and Richard Nixon until resigning over the invasion of Cambodia. And his new book is Between the Graves, about the history of U.S.-Afghan relations and American policy in South Asia, based on thousands of previously secret documents. He's also at work on the comparative history of the inner politics of the United States and Soviet Russia. So obviously the Russians and the Americans have one thing in common. Neither want al-Qaeda to take over Syria. And when you say that, you know, you can't help thinking how absurd things have gotten. We have this war on terror aimed at al-Qaeda, and yet our good Saudi friends are behind nurturing and arming this al-Nusra front that seems to be the most effective fighting force on the rebel side. So, and we are sort of dithering about saying what a terrible thing it would be for those people to take over. And Putin is saying, you know, you idiots, don't you understand? We're 500 miles away from these guys in the Caucasus, and you're going to end up with Somalia on the Mediterranean. So there's a lot to work with here, and Obama's going to be over there in the next couple of days. It seems like a no-brainer.
Well, it does seem like a no-brainer, and obviously Putin had a clearer vision of Russian national interest than we did of American national interest. You know, even the so-called evil patrons here of the Syrians, the Iranians and Hezbollah and others who are aiding and abetting, obviously have their own interests in the region that are paramount to the survival of the Assad regime. I think they should have been talked to as well as the Russians. The president talks constantly about mobilizing international coalitions and consulting with partners and all the rest, and his diplomacy, I think, couldn't be further from that ideal. This is a major failure of long-term American foreign policy. Ever since the fall, the 2011 fall of the Mubarak regime in Egypt, I think this administration has been at sea, and I think it remains there. And this is obviously, as everyone has pointed out with great anguish, a terrible and wrenching situation. It reminds me very much, Ian, of the Spanish Civil War, in which, of course, there were outside elements at work, and in the end, no negotiated settlement possible. There are these moments in geopolitics when you stare into the abyss, and the abyss simply stares back. I don't think there's a way the United States can fix this. By covert action with the Free Syrian Army, I think those who know Syria doubt that the Free Syrian Army is any of that it's free, or that it's even predominantly Syrian in its supply, or that it's an army very much at this point. You do have a popular uprising against a wretched dictator, a mafia regime that's been in control for a long time, but which represents the interests, after all, of a sizable portion of the Syrian population. This is a sectarian and clan war, not just a Gaddafi-like dictatorship perched atop an oppressed country. This is much more complex than that, and quite frankly, it's beyond the analytical or instrumental ability of the United States at this point, given our firepower intellectually in foreign policy, to deal with. So I think that we're going to have to gird our loins here, expect a lot more horrible scenes like the ones we saw after the gas attack. Even the strikes that the administration is planning, even if they were moderately, in General Dempsey's terms, moderately successful, are not going to deter Assad from assuring his own survival. If he thinks his survival is at stake, he doesn't want to end up like Gaddafi in a ditch in a village, he will use whatever he has, and this is an extremely well-armed, fairly modern military arsenal.
Well, just in closing, Roger Morris, this peculiar alliance is between democratic interventionists and Republican neoconservatives on one side and liberal Democrats and libertarian Republicans who are against Syrian intervention on the other. It again reminds me of the moral bankruptcy of liberals who used to be the champions against American foreign policy hypocrisy, supporting dictators around the world, and don't seem to be for anything anymore. They're just against things, but they're not for anything.
I think that's a very, very important point. I think this, what no one seems to be saying in this dialogue, is how this is all going to bear on the midterm elections in 2014, and for that matter, on the presidential elections in 2016. The ghost in the rafters here is Rand Paul and the Tea Party resurgence inside the Republican Party. I'm not at all certain that Obama's going to win the House. I think that there's a real revolt against Boehner. It seems to me clear that the Republicans are going to have a foreign policy debate in 2014 and 2016, and it will be to the embarrassment and the shame, ultimately, of the liberals and the left of the Democratic Party, because they don't really have a foreign policy in, as you know, and they haven't had one for years. So we will have this neo-isolationist right-wing, in some ways libertarian foreign policy, in some ways it's ersatz, but we will have that on one side, and on the other a kind of intellectual vacuum.
And of course, it's Rand Paul that is filling that vacuum. He's a young college kids who used to gravitate to the left are now joining the libertarian fold.
So. He's articulate. He's dynamic. He knows his stuff. He does his homework. I think his performance in the Foreign Relations Committee was relatively impressive. It certainly moved Rubio and some of his potential rivals in 2016 to palpably change their views and their positions. I think he's at this point he's probably the preeminent senator if you discount Ted Cruz and that rump of the worst of reaction. But Rand Paul is going to be a formidable figure, and he's going to challenge the liberals right where they are most vulnerable, which is in international affairs.
And the liberal Markey voted present. So there you have it. I thank you for joining us, Roger Morris.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Roger Morris, who served in the United States Foreign Service and on the senior staff of the National Security Council under both Presidents Lyndon Johnson and Richard Nixon until resigning over the invasion of Cambodia. His new book, Between the Graves, is about the history of U.S.-Afghan relations and American policy in South Asia based on thousands of previously secret documents. And he's also at work on a comparative history of the inner politics of the United States and Soviet Russia. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow at 5 p.m. with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.